just at least for announcements. Thank you, Desiree. So I'll call a meeting to order at 12:05. I'd like to ask George, would you like to lead us in the pledge?
Sure, Stephanie. Everybody please rise and face the flag and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Place your right hand over your heart. Those of you who are veterans, you may do the hand salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Ready? Two.
I don't know how much of my background noise you're getting. I'll mute when I can. But thank you very much, George Dixon. So Desiree, you want to take the role?
Sure. John Burek.
Present.
Eric Duane. Alexis Federico.
Present.
Alexander Gonzalez. Alex Maslin.
Present.
Robert McDonald. Michael Radigan. Stephen Vargas. And Stephanie Wade.
Present.
We do not have quorum at this time.
I think Eric joined. Eric, are you on?
There he is.
I am here. Just hobbling across campus to make this meeting.
Thank you, Eric.
And we have quorum now, Chair.
Thank you. I'm just going to begin by welcoming everybody on. I'm glad we made quorum. I think it's going to relate to what we're going to talk about in item six, which is the future of our meetings. So let's keep that in mind. And with that, I'll go into public comment. Do we have anyone from the public who wishes to speak, or did we receive any written communications?
We did not receive any requests in advance. There are members of the public present this morning. If you would like to address the board, please use the hand raise icon or press star 9 and I will unmute you. Seeing no hands, Chair.
Okay, thank you. I'm just gonna move right then into our executive committee report. I don't have much to report except what we discussed in brief last week. So item six is the plan at the moment is that we're gonna meet in person on March 8th, 2023. And that will be at the Grand Avenue location at in the offices of the Orange County Veteran Service Office. So we have a room there, we have flags. I think we need to order a Space Force flag. I'll let Desiree know, let Renee Ramirez know. Got to have that Space Force flag. But now I'd like to open it up for a discussion of future meeting options. And then we can have a separate discussion about coffee chats. Is there anybody who has any of the council members have anything to say about meeting in person and where we might meet other than Grand Ave and what times we might meet?
I mean, I can go if.
Please. Okay.
So I this is similar along the lines of what I said, I think last meeting, you know, my position is that, yeah, I think for one, when we talk about where to meet and at what time, I think we should discuss whether, you know, we have remote capabilities for people and more importantly, whether we need to meet every month or whether we can meet every other month. Since I've been here, I think we could probably accomplish more and have more substantive discussions and more prepared if we switch the meetings to every other month. I think that would also facilitate more council members making it in person because you have something that is, you know, it occurs less frequently, is a bigger priority and needs to be in person to the max extent that we can make it. So that would be my suggestion. I'm not sure in terms of regulations, whether we can move the meetings to every other month and then perhaps do the coffee chats in the intervening months. But that's just what I would like to throw out there. And again, if this is something that needs to be done on a subcommittee basis and to explore solutions, you know, I'm happy to do what I can with that. But I would like to see, before I stop, I would like to see us going to different areas if possible within the county.
Thanks, Alexis. Very thoughtful comments. I'd like to hear from John and Alex and Eric as well.
Yeah, I don't disagree with regards to the frequency of the meetings. I think if possible, switching it to every other month has a few benefits. I think it increases the availability, as Alexis mentioned. And then also, I think it gives us more time to pack more kind of meaningful items into the actual meeting. As far as where and how we facilitate those meetings, as long as we can stay within whatever guidelines are in place for us. I agree with, I think it was Alexis that brought it up last meeting that I think we're kind of past being able to justify not having in-person meetings of some kind at some point. Again, how frequently those occur is up for debate and things like that. But I think we need to get back to a point where we're having some type of in-person face-to-face meetings that are available not only for us to get together, but for the public.
No, I agree. I think in-person is really important. Also, I do like the idea Alexis has is having it different parts of the county, if that is possible, because it would give certain members of the public that not necessarily be able to travel, say, from Fullerton to San Clemente. I think that's a great opportunity for more public participation. I do like mixing virtual in, because that's how, we run our business. I think it's important, but I do think a virtual component, either every other, not virtual, but a in-person component every other month or quarterly, that's something. But again, I agree. Also, I think it was with Alex, and the COVID excuse is kind of worn itself out.
Yep, I'll take a crack at it. I am in favor of mixed modalities for all meetings. And I will tell you that it's not the COVID excuse anymore. It's the smart choice. Yep. All right. And it's because that enables the greatest amount of participation. I've seen it in education. We've been doing this for the last 3 years. I've seen it in other areas as well. I don't disagree that meeting in person is important, but I will tell you, what's old is becoming new again. We've done this before, and it was quite a saddle to get on top of, to be able to be traveling all over Orange County once a month to make a meeting. And that's when it was in the evening. Now you add the complication of it being in the middle of my work day, and it makes it extremely difficult to get people in my age bracket, maybe, to participate. Then all you have is what was on the committee when I got here, and this is not disparaging, but you only have one demographic represented as far as age brackets. Here we have such a smattering of all different types of demographics. I believe that if we limit ourselves by making it one modality, that we will end up losing people by the wayside. So I would encourage movement of meetings. That would be great. I'm going to tell you that it can be burdensome if it's done every month, and that mixed modalities would be the way to go.
I'd like to ask a follow-on question of Eric and Alex as well. The time can be changed. What staff is saying at the moment is that it just has to be within working hours. So I think realistically, the latest we could do is probably 4 o'clock, and it might even be 3:30. Would that make any material difference if we were going every other month? Would that make a material difference for some of the folks if we went later in the afternoon? And I would also like to address it, since our mission is to be available to the public, I think doing it only during the workday is not conducive to our mission, and I want to push back on that. But for right now, within the parameters that staff is able to support these meetings, Eric, I saw you nodding vigorously, but it would be considerably easier for you to make an in-person meeting bi-monthly if it were later in the day. Is that
correct? I'd love it. Yeah. I mean, I'm off at 3:30, and taking off an hour early is far less painful than taking off 2 or 3 hours during my lunch, going all the way down to South County and then trekking all the way back up to LA to go back to work. So yeah, for sure. And if it was at the end of my shift, for sure.
And then I'd also have to ask Alex Maslin the same question, and you know, how it sort of works with release time in your job and with, you know, having a lot of little ones around at home.
I don't want to throw too much of my input on the scheduling and time because with my line of work, my schedule changes so frequently. What works for me this month is very different from what might work next month. So my approach to it is I'm just going to have to figure it out and make it work no matter what time it's at, because my schedule does change so frequently. So I don't really want to influence the time and that we're going to meet because my schedule changes so much. I think we're all kind of at least partially, it sounds like, in agreement in the basic concepts of the direction we want to go. I think, you know, throwing out some ideas, you know, maybe if we're going to meet every other month, have every other one of those meetings be in person, and maybe, you know, so we're basically in every 4 months, we have an in-person meeting and we have a virtual meeting. You know, so that throughout the year, we're kind of hitting a lot of wickets there, and keeping in mind, every one of us is doing this, you know, on the side to something else, and have other obligations, whether they be personal or professional. Finding some kind of hybrid, I think, is going to be the answer going forward, because I don't disagree with what's been brought up with the virtual. I mean, there is huge benefits to virtual meetings, just like there is to in-person meetings. So I think finding a hybrid that keeps it easy for us, but also keeps us kind of honest to our obligations to, you know, the community that we're serving.
Yeah, and I didn't address Eric's point, and you brought it up again about the need to have multiple ways for the public to access our meetings. And I will tell you that in my conversations with county staff, they relented and said there is nothing that prevents us from being able to access, or there's no legal problem that we can allow hybrid meetings. That's allowable. They just seem to think it's a big logistical hurdle. So I think it's incumbent upon us to find out exactly how we can handle that logistical hurdle. Because I will say, as far as Eric's concerned, it will not be legal. At the end of this month, after February, we will not have the legal ability for council members to participate virtually in a meeting. But there's no prohibition on the public participating virtually in the meeting. And so that's where I would like to move us going forward. And I think I'm, you know, unless somebody else wants to make the proposal, I think that's where I'm heading. But we haven't heard from Marcos or John. And before we go to John, I want to let Marcos know, we're really just trying to figure out, our next meeting is tentatively scheduled for 12 p.m. At Grand Avenue, but we're discussing or the schedule and frequency of our meetings, and what time those meetings will take place. John, did you have some things to offer? Follow on.
You know, I don't have anything else to offer, but again, you know, the afternoon is always preferable. If we could do that, I mean, good chunk of the day is done before 3 o'clock. So that would be easier. But again, I you know, I'm still a believer in the mix of if virtual and in person, because I do think there is a public component of this, and I think in person is important.
Thank you. Marcos.
So, you know, really agreeing with what Maslin has to share on this, I think that, you know, we're all carrying different hats, and it's just a matter of, you know, going in the best direction for the team. I think that digital meets are efficient and community engagement is essential. And so a fine spot in between should be ideal.
Okay, so...
I'm sorry, can I say one more thing? Just it's in response to some of the comments. I mean, first of all, it's important for us because we, you know, we are appointed, and being able to have a good demographic mix of people in our positions is important. But we also need to think of all the veterans who can't take off at 3 p.m. to drive up or to log in or to do whatever. I don't mean any disrespect, but I would like more information as to what the pushback is about occurring after hours meeting. I just sat and watched a 4-hour virtual meeting from the Dana Point City Council last night from my couch, and people are there on Tuesdays like they are from San Clemente. And I know it's county, but I mean, this is a service that the Board of Supervisors has deemed appropriate to provide the veterans in this community and their family members. And I don't see why, if we have a meeting once a month, every other month, why we are limited to the staff's working hours. And I would like some more guidance on that. You know, as far as logistical hurdles, I also don't, you know, I would like some information as to how holding it. I mean, again, I sat there and watched on a couch, and, you know, public comments can be remote and you can watch the meetings and do all of that. And, you know, San Clemente is like that, Dana Point's like that, Laguna's like all of our city council and all of these cities host meetings in which the public can look in and participate. So I'm just, and they can send their comments in to be read out loud if they're sitting at home watching. So I would like some more information on that, because quite frankly, where I'm sitting, I don't see that it's going to be an insurmountable logistical hurdle to hold it after hours or with mixed modalities, as Eric likes to call it. So that's it.
Alexis, very valuable. And then I think right at this point, I would like to appoint an ad hoc committee to discuss and work with county staff on meeting times and the ability to meet to provide staff support after the 9-to-5 window. And I'm going to tell you, to be explicit on the point as I understand it, our bylaws dictate that these meetings must be conducted at no county expense. And the way county council and community services have interpreted that provision of the bylaws is that any staff that was paid any degree of mileage, so if they had to drive anywhere, and anything outside of normal working hours of the 9-to-5 window. So I would like us to produce a question for the Board of Supervisors about, will that provision continue to bind us, and what solution the Board of Supervisors would have. So I'm a little hesitant to put you on that, but if you really want it, I would. But Eric, would you be willing to be on an ad hoc, because you can understand, I think, also the technical parameters?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so
yeah, I'm like, if I have to set it up, I'll do it. I mean,
okay, so I'd like you to chair it, and I'd like two others. Who else?
I'm the S6. All right, I got
John?
It. I'm the S6.
Okay, Alexis, I'm not drafting you.
Yeah, no, I'm free. I think I have some time. I've got about, you know, 2 months. So I think we can get it. Yeah, plenty of time. So happy to do it.
All right. Well, and I'm guessing that the smart people that are going to do this, John, Alexis, and Eric, are people that can do this without making a lot of work for themselves and can coordinate it, especially remotely, without having to meet in person. All right. Moving forward, then, I'm going to make a motion that we move our meeting time, and I want discussion, and I'm willing to hear from staff. I don't think Renee is here, but I know Desiree is. My motion is that our next meeting be an in-person meeting, that it be conducted on March 8th, but that we move the meeting time to 3 p.m. And we're, for the moment, we're going to do that at the Grand Avenue location. And at that time, I'm hoping that our ad hoc committee can have a report on and perhaps a draft letter for our consideration, and that we could agendize and discuss sending to the Board of Supervisors.
I'm sorry,
again, the motion is that we meet in person, but as planned on March 8th, at 3 p.m.
I'm sorry, Chair, that's not on the agenda for an action item. I know that we listed it as discussion, but not an action item to change the time of the meeting.
I think we can do that. I'm going to consult the bylaws. Why can't we change the time of our meeting?
Give me 1 second.
I mean, if there's some difficulty with staff supporting it, let's deal with that. But I don't think there's anything in the bylaws that precludes us from picking a meeting time that's more productive for the council.
Give me 1 second. I'm just trying to look through the bylaws as we're speaking.
I think someone might have sent them around recently, but for some reason I cannot find them in my email.
I don't have them on this computer handy, but I know I've read them recently. So Desiree, if you find something that you think we need to know from the bylaws, I'm happy to hear it. But otherwise, I'm going to ask if there's a second.
Second.
I'll second.
Marcos Villa seconds. Discussion. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing no interest in further discussion, I'm going to call for a vote. Desiree, would you take roll, please, of the vote? Roll call vote.
I'm not sure that I can do it because it's considered an action item. We didn't put it on the agenda as an action item to take a roll call vote, or it's not an action at this point. So I wouldn't need to do any type of roll call vote.
Okay, I'll take roll then. John Burek?
Aye.
John is aye. Eric Duane?
Aye.
Marcos Villa?
Aye.
Alexis Federico?
Aye.
Myself, Stephanie Wade? Aye. It's unanimous. Thanks. We can come back and revisit the issue, you and I, Desiree. I just wanted to get the vote done. As of now, I think we've decided that we're going to meet at 3 o'clock. Let me ask George, does the VSO have any difficulty supporting us at 3 p.m. On March 8th for our first meeting?
I see Claudia just jumped on, and we're generally here until 5 p.m.
I see Claudia's hand is raised.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear.
Loud and clear.
Oh, thank you. I'm so sorry.
And I didn't take Alex's. Alex was a yes as well, excuse me. I'm sorry, Claudia, go ahead.
No, thank you so much. I have been hearing in the background, but for some reason, I think I was outside as a guest and not inside as joined in the panel, so my apologies. I was wondering why you couldn't see everybody. First of all, I wanna express my gratitude in all the discussions, and we're hearing all the concerns in which everyone's expressing. As the advisory, you know, abilities to come together, to join, and to keep the participation open. Yes, I am going to say with Desiree, I think the issue was making sure that we're abiding by the Brown Act. Whenever there is no action item on the agenda, you know, posting for Brown Act requirements, that's where the issue was. Can you take an action item? And I want to say that unless it was posted on the agenda as an action item, that's where the other could have taken. But definitely, I appreciate, thank you so much for your willingness to do an ad hoc meeting so that we can talk about some participation and how to address some of the concerns with staffing availabilities. Yes, that is in the bylaws that we are to participate and to provide the support and advocacy for the advisory council during the business hour. So thank you, Stephanie, for bringing that to everyone's attention. But absolutely, we want to be open and mindful to having some future discussions on how to best tackle the challenges with the virtual meetings versus the in-persons, and the challenges that if the meetings move wherever that location is, the question is there capabilities for the technology needed to make that happen? So we want to definitely consult some items so that we can make sure that we abiding by all our council, advisory council requirements, and that we can best support each other during this process.
Great. Having heard that, Claudia, I will be in touch right after this meeting. We can go over the bylaws, and I mean, if we want to not call it a action item with a vote, then I think I probably have the authority to just call and change the meeting time. But I'm not trying to do battle with the staff. I'm trying to make this committee work to its fullest potential. And so I think we can cooperate on that. So let's make sure I don't have your number any longer, I don't think. I've changed jobs and I lost a few numbers. So if you could reach out to me with via the chat and just get me your number, I'd appreciate it. And then I saw another hand raised. Alexis, did you have a comment?
I did. I'm available also for a special meeting if we need to call a special meeting to vote on this.
Thank you. All right, I'd like to move on in the agenda. George, would you care to give us an update on the Veterans Service Office? And very happy we are to have you at the helm.
Thank you, Stephanie. So let me see if I can get my share screen to go. For everybody in the audience, what I did is I put together our from 7/1/2022 to the end of, or 12/31/2022, of what the Veteran Service Office has been doing to paint a true picture as to what goes on here. I know we have a lot of new commissioners that probably like, oh, what do they do down there? But hopefully I'll be able to show you the volume of traffic that we have flowing in here. Well, I know we discussed the wait times and averages. So I know we have a couple of mathematicians out there. So when I start putting these numbers up here, just calculate the numbers times 7 reps. So let me see if it'll let me share. Uh-oh, somebody disabled my screen. So it won't let me share. So it says host is disabled participant screen.
Desiree, can you make
Yeah, you can share, George.
Okay, there it goes. Let me see. Okay, can everybody see it? Are we good to go? Thumbs up, yay, nay. Good. Okay, so looking at across, I put this together. So this is generally what we would be doing at the end of each year, giving the commission an update on how much volume and how much revenue the County Veterans Service Office generates for our veterans in our community. So looking across the top, unique outreach programs that the County Veterans Service Officer does, and everybody knows this, is the veterans designation on the driver's license. So commissioners, thank you guys for getting veterans to come in. From July 1, 2022 to 12/31/2022, our veteran service officers had 1,008 new contacts just from that program. 1,008 new contacts. Could you imagine if the County Veterans Service Office was able to do 1,008 new claims for benefits? But generally, we have a lot of veterans that are rated at 100%. They just want the word veteran on the driver's license. But we also, the design of the program was to get veterans to come in and talk about their benefits. Now, keep in mind, you may be 100%, but there may be some additional entitlements such as aid and attendance, other benefits available to the veterans, disabled spouse, college tuition fee waiver, and so on and so on and so on. So we have a pretty cool thing here at OC. We have a little call center. We have three people answering the phones for us. I wish I would have had this in LA County. So when you call down there, they complain about people not answering their phones. So there's about in that 6 month period, that little call center, those three individuals fielded 7,405 calls. So if I have a mathematician here, divide that by, what is it, 26 weeks, then divide that by four, then divide that by a day. So their average pickup time is less than 6 minutes, and they do get the bulk of their calls. Vet rep appointments, physical, by phone. And I'm happy to report that we've been having about 8 to 10 people walk in without a virtual appointment since we kind of changed the narrative on our webpage. Hopefully they did that for us. We're making it more user friendly. There's about 1,640 unique veterans. These are veterans that were first entered into our system, VetPro. Brand new veterans from Orange County and surrounding counties, because we get them from all over the place. 720 claims actions. So 7,020 claims actions are actions that are gonna lead a veteran, widow, dependent, or survivor to a monetary benefit or benefits that they have earned. And it's not just an original claim. I like to look at the County Veterans Service Office, since I've been one for a long time, as a small law office. And I think Alexis is a lawyer, or does she work in that background? So think about having 20 good paralegals that are better than lawyers. So at times. So that's the way I look at it. And these vet reps, I mean, there's the volume that comes in. They're dedicated. And Ben can expand on what we did last night. And we did a presentation. There was about 40 people out there. So awards wise, so what that does is we have to input all these monetary benefits, just like a law office. We're better than Larry H. Parker. We posted 1,947 awards, 1,947 awards. Now, if you divide 1,947 into $476,504, how much money is that getting our veterans? Then times that monetary rate by 12, that's what we get them annually. Retroactive benefits, our County Veterans Service Office has gotten over $3 million for residents of Orange County. And college tuition fee waivers, I had to go back in the data system because VetPro is not tracking the numbers accurately, but we actually did about over $4 million in tuition waive for our children. I was pitching last night, so I'm getting a dry throat. So right now we're also looking at bringing on two more vet reps, and they're in the process of going through the hiring process. I just got the word from Stephanie today, Claudia. So we're tracking on that. So this is just a basic overview of what we do, and such a great group of individuals here that are dedicated to the cause for our veterans, dependents, widows, and orphans. There's a lot more outreach programs that I can connect in later on. If Stephanie or commission, if you send me what you want in these reports, I can plug those in there, because data is tracked by our VetPro system. So everything I tell you is tracked in our data system. And the end of my report, ask me the questions.
Right, I'll take a bit of personal privilege and I'll ask my question first. The breakout of the number of appointments, I'd like to also see if we could add into a dashboard the appointments that are done, the wait times for those appointments, and broken out by phone appointments versus in-person appointments. And I think the in-person, I realize phone is great, and that, you know, or teleconferencing, virtual appointments are terrific, but there are things and there are also individuals that really are gonna require in-person. And I'd like to know what the wait times are for either, because when I looked on the dashboard, or I'm sorry, on the appointment reservation system, there was a considerable difference between teleconference appointments and in-person appointments, and both wait times were fairly long. And so that's something that I think we all want to keep an eye on.
So Stephanie, to piggyback off of that, I looked at that Q-Track system that they had, and I was trying to track, because it's supposed to track the actual appointment times and settings. And keep in mind, everybody on the call, we do have a lot of cancellations, and I'm looking to expand more times for people to come in. And as you know, we're hiring up, and once that happens, the wait times are going to be reduced. Anybody that's worked in a heavy volume office, such as myself, I have to look at online appointment, by phone appointment, walk-in appointment, and phone calls. So if I tabulate all those numbers together, it actually reduces the wait time a lot. But I see where you're coming from, Stephanie. It's like when I called the VA, I was sitting in here yesterday with a veteran, and it took me 45 minutes to get a hold of a human. Our call times is less than 6 minutes. I think a lot less than that. And my observation, just watching them in the front, and if you ever, when you guys come up to our new location, our front end staff is really excellent. They're actually servicing the people that aren't booked in the system for a walk-in or a VSD, but actually coming up to the counter in less than 2 to 3 minutes. And then if it's a complicated case, the vet reps assist them really fast. But what we'll try to do when we get the QTAC set up correctly, we should be able to track that data. I'm not a mathematician, so I'm just throwing numbers in my head. And I was in the infantry, so I think I calculated it pretty much well, but I have a really good one that calculates numbers. I asked Claudia, I throw numbers to Claudia all the time, and we start laughing about, is that the actual wait time? But I hear what you guys are saying, and it's very frustrating when you look at a virtual platform and it says you're 1 month out, but coming in the door, it's a different story. Is that kind of like a true statement for you guys? Kind of see the concepts of it?
I think that was helpful, you know, and I would ask Claudia as well if we'd include the wait time information in the big voice going forward.
And that's my report.
Thank you, George. Well, definitely, you know, when it comes to information and data, we want to make sure that we give you accurate, validated information. So where some wait times in certain requests for claims could be different from others, there are other services that our service rep claims are doing that are very quick, very immediate. So it's really a broad range. So it'll be our due diligence to really describe everything in its accurate form of what we do. So we have a little work to do on this side so that we can make sure that we give, you know, kudos to all the hard work that's happening and all the services being provided to our veterans in Orange County. So thank you, Stephanie.
If we could try and answer that, if staff could at least think about it for the March meeting, how to report, what's the most, you know, the smartest way or the most holistic way to report on wait times? Because I'm quite aware that we're about to bring on two new service officers. Yep. And, you know, once they get trained up, wait times will be reduced. But that's where I think the rubber meets the road for veterans. And it's the consistent complaint I've heard for the past 5 or 6 years about Orange County, and particularly at the student veterans organizations. They often refer people to Riverside or Los Angeles or San Diego because our wait times tend to be longer, especially for in-person appointments. So I would just like that reputation to change, and I think it will, and I think we've already made big strides, but I think that's the area where I'm hearing consistently that we've fallen down as a county, and I'd like to be able to have the metric there so we can see it and we're monitoring on a month-to-month basis.
Now, I'm thinking to piggyback off of what you and Claudia are saying, Stephanie, a good example of what actually happens when somebody comes in for an initial thing. They do a triage, they secure their appointment of representation, and these are things that boards aren't seeing that we may want to report to, and like you're stating, different types of services that occur up front, which will show what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And for instance, like at one point, I think we were talking, I talked to staff a couple of years ago, and we were talking about the wait times, and the wait time statistics they were quoting to me included the online system for the fee waiver, for tuition fee waivers. Well, that's really not even an appointment. That's an automated system. And so I think it was sort of juking the stats a little, and it was, you know, and here's another instance. You know, I know that at one point the wait times were for in-person appointments were about, I think, 60 to 90 days. And, you know, I asked about that. And I was so, well, you know, if a veteran has a letter that they have to respond to the VA in a shorter period of time, we're obligated to see that veteran. But the question is, we're not advertising that anywhere to the veterans. And so those are some of the things we really have to start making sure that we're doing. I mean, if that's going to be the case and our wait times are longer, then I think we're obligated to make that point. You know, if, you know, make an annotation on that online reservation system that, you know, if you have a VA claim that requires assistance in a specified period of time, please call this number.
Yes, and that goes a good point where it comes into deadlines and timelines, such as appeals or supplemental actions that have to be done within a year. So we can probably change that in our webpage.
It's a communication thing.
Yeah. Right? Yep. Thank you.
Okay, that was a great report. I'd like to move on to Ben Gales and our CalVet update.
All right. Thanks, Stephanie. Hey, everyone. First, kudos to George and his team for a great presentation last night at the Huntington Beach Central Library through the Huntington Beach American Legion post there, focused on survivors' benefits, DIC, burial. Really well done, really well appreciated by the community. Just really valuable. That was great stuff. And on March 10th, CalVet, we're going to be having a big transition assistance event at Golden West College. And we're going to be inviting every student veteran in OC, actually Region 8, LA student veterans are welcome. And so it's going to be open to all veterans and their families. And we're going to have a whole host of service providers there. So, you know, VA, healthcare, benefits, George, his team, OC for Vets. I haven't gotten that invitation, Yolanda, but obviously coming, and a whole bunch of our different nonprofits, you know, serving families, legal assistance. So it's going to be the whole deal. And we're going to have some presentations too, kind of the main, I think, government, focused presentations. So someone from George and his team, and definitely food and networking. So we're trying to make it a really big event. Tom Boskamp from Coastline College is doing a ton of marketing. He's pledged to visit every VRC in OC to, you know, present the event. And I think I can post the flyer now here in the chat when I'm done, but certainly anyone from the OCVAC, more than welcome, encouraged to attend. And, you know, just a great chance to, you know, just connect with just a whole bunch of people doing this work in OC. And so, yeah, that's it for me.
All right. Thanks, Ben. I really appreciate it. Alana, OC for Vets update, please. By the way, George, I think you're still sharing screen.
It's the 11 Bravo for you.
Did it go away?
Alana, you're still muted, I think. Oh, no.
Technical difficulties. Oh, no.
See, this wouldn't happen if we were in person. No, I'm teasing you. Don't get mad at me.
Oh, no.
All right. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I guess when I go from Teams to Zoom or change platforms, I guess it decides to change microphones on me. Sorry about that. So for OC for Vets, the big update is our upcoming move, which the VSO is going to be moving back up to our space. My understanding is that it may be delayed again. Originally, the VSO and OC for Vets are planning our move up the weekend of February 24th. However, it may be delayed again. So more to come on that. As far as our program, staffing, I finally have a start date for my new staff. It's been months. So that will be March 10th. And then there was a hiring fair where we picked up another candidate that we're making an offer to. So I'm hoping that that person can make it to our team much sooner than this person that I think I've been waiting like 4 months for, which would then leave me with one position that I need to fill. So it's getting more positive, but then on March 9th, I have one going on maternity leave. So it's like juggling staff, but we are still here to provide the best services possible for our veterans and military families. Other than that, I think that is about it.
Thank you. I'm so glad to hear that you're staffing up, and I know George, it's the same problem, and it often there's a big lag time and we know what the labor market is like. So that's really important to our veterans. Thank you. I'm going to ask Alex if he has any communications report to share.
I do not.
Okay. And we at the moment still don't have an events and outreach chair. I talked Alexis off the ledge of taking on a new assignment. I'm going to ask if there's anyone here who would be willing to take that on and become our events and outreach chair. Don't think I'm looking at you, John.
I'll consider it. Let me give you a call and we'll talk about it.
Perfect. Yeah. And we need to reschedule our meeting. So let's do that. I think now you and I are in both much better place to do that as well.
Yep. Okay.
All right. So we'll turn it to council comments. And John, since you're unmuted, we'll start with you.
I have no comments at this time. Actually, the only thing is it's our new VSO, I don't see his name here, George. George, I'd like to give you a call. Just give you a call and talk a couple questions I have. That's all.
Well, sir.
Eric Duane?
Nothing to pass. No comment.
Okay. Alex Maslin?
Nope, nothing else.
Marcos Villa?
Nothing more at this time. Thank you.
Alexis Federico?
Yeah, so I think there's a Women Veterans Symposium still scheduled for March 11th. I don't have many details on that yet, but I have been connecting with Bobby. So Bobby mentioned that, and I spoke with Stephanie about it too. So if you know any women veterans or people interested in women veterans issues, I will circulate more details once I get them, but I am planning to attend. I didn't get a chance to comment necessarily on the metrics issue, George, that we discussed, but I think it's a really great idea because it can help us. I mean, there's always can be problems with data, but it can help us recognize trends one way or another, allow us to give you guys, you know, the feedback and also recognition for low wait times. And then it also helps us justify staffing issues to the Orange County Board of Supervisors and kind of see the impact on that. So I think that's wonderful. Thank you so much for taking that on. And then lastly, I heard, I think Michael Radigan, Lieutenant Colonel Radigan's name called. Can someone let us know, is he a new council member or?
I will check the minutes.
I was going to say, Desiree, I heard you call, or it was, did you call his name?
We received notice from the clerk of the board that we had two new members. And okay. They were sent the agenda and the Zoom link, but I haven't heard from either one.
Well, I've been in touch with Lieutenant Colonel Radigan. He's a reservist. He's actually drilling in Quantico this weekend and was very bummed to miss his first meeting. So just so you all know, you will see him at the next one, and he's looking forward to working with everyone. And that's all I have for comments.
Thanks so much. And by the way, to dovetail on that, the Women's Leadership Luncheon is at the Anaheim VFW, and it starts at 10:30. And for those of you, you know, it's a Saturday. So those of you who can make it, you know, it would be great to also have some men in the audience. I think that makes a big difference. And it would be a great chance to network and speak to folks. Other than that, anything for the good of the order? All rounds complete. All right. Like to adjourn?